You know, sometimes it's hard to argue when you hear people say that pro wrestling has some of the dumbest fans across sports and entertainment. And no, I'm not crapping on any of you out there, but I got a gem of a story to open up this week's episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Welcome, everyone. It is September 13th. It's actually Wednesday afternoon, several hours before Dynamite airs. I'm doing this early because I've been on vacation for almost 2 weeks. Physically, mentally, not there yet. Overwhelmed, insurance work, personal stuff, you know, unpacking, you know, trying to get work done. So I wanted to do this a little bit earlier today. We're going to have some fun conversation for this week. And I will tell you, originally I was going to open up the show talking about CM Punk. Yes, everybody knows by now he was fired. Yes, everybody and their mothers talked about it. But a lot of you have not heard my viewpoint on it, which is going to surprise some of you out there. Plus, you know, while I was in Florida, I was talking to some of my friends in and out of pro wrestling. And one person in particular who works behind the scenes in AEW gave me some firsthand information that, as far as I know, is not reported anywhere. And if any of you that know me, I don't even need to say this, but for some of you that might be newer, you know, my reputation going back to 1997 speaks for itself. I am not a news reporter. I used to report news, but since 2007, I opine. I give my views, my opinions. Sometimes we get a little news story here and there. But when something does break, and I want to give you the most accurate information, I will reach out to the sources. I don't go to TMZ. I don't go to wrestling news sites. I don't go to podcasts. I go to the actual people. Case in point, Monday with Matt Riddle. You saw all the misinformation being reported, all the claims, the accusations, and 90% of it was wrong. So rather than me just react to it, I'm not going to go to TMZ. I'm not going to go to a website. I'm not going to go to a podcast. I go to the source. I get the information straight from the source. And I reached out and got this directly from Misha Montana and Matt Riddle. And I shared with you what the story was. And people realize now that what I talked about was 100% true. So when we get into the CM Punk stuff a little bit later, you will ultimately find out through other chains out there that what I talked about was 100% true. So originally I was going to open up the show with CM Punk. But then last night on NXT, Becky Lynch goes and wins the NXT Women's Championship. She is now a Grand Slam champion. And, you know, it's funny. We were wondering when she becomes, you know, the next step when she wins either the Women's World Championship, which is different now. It's not the Raw Women's Championship or the SmackDown Women's Championship, or she may win the WWE Women's Championship on SmackDown. What is she called? And some of you said quintuple champion. And I was thinking, you know, that actually could work, because when she does become a, you know, a champion five times across, you know, five different belts, they could spell quintuple with an extra N. And for those out there with half a brain, you know why I'm saying that. I think that actually would look pretty freaking cool. So we'll talk about Becky Lynch in a few minutes, because the reaction online yesterday, I don't know if people intentionally do it just to trigger negative emotion, but I watched people, you know, majority of people out there were thought it was a cool moment, thought it was great. Becky Lynch, you know, it was a nice moment, elevation for NXT. But some people out there, oh, you're burying Tiffany Stratton. How could you do that? That's a joke. And I'm like, you know, first of all, yeah, it gave me kind of vibes of when Dolph Ziggler came in and won the championship from Braun, and Braun ended up out of it even better than what he was before. And I think that'll happen with Tiffany Stratton as well. But we have to put that aside for a few moments, because I got to share with you something that came out tonight that's a gem. And this is going to be a major discussion in the pro wrestling world within the next 24 hours. Once it circulates everywhere, oh, you got to wait till you see the people out there making excuses. It literally brings out the dumbest of the dumb. And, you know, I don't know what this obsession is with some AEW fans, and not just fans, people that are in media, that AEW has to be considered number one over WWE in something, somewhere. And yes, there are WWE fans that love to rub it in AEW fans' faces. My God, they're rubbing it in about, you know, Becky Lynch scoring a higher rating on NXT than pretty much anything that AEW's put out in recent memory. I got to share this gem with you to open up the show. All right, AEW All In, 81,035. I have talked about this for months, that AEW deserves all of the praise and credit for selling that many tickets. Whether you thought the show was great, it sucked, overwhelming, underwhelming, disappointing, you know, whatever, however you felt about it, doesn't take away the fact that AEW made history. They sold more tickets for a wrestling event than anybody else in history. But as you know, on my shows, I am always very careful about my words. And I have said this for years. How many of you out there have seen, you know, people report that a certain number of tickets are sold for an AEW event, and then someone will post online pictures of the AEW event in progress from inside the building, and half the building is empty. And then people will laugh at it, make fun of it, and this and that. But then, you know, you realize that a lot of people out there, you know, buy the tickets. I'm not saying scalpers buy 50,000 tickets, but, you know, you get it, some people don't understand that there are tens of thousands of people out there that buy tickets for everything. Baseball, football, concerts, mini events, you know, sport, wrestling, whatever it is. If they think that it will be in demand, they will buy it. It's like the stock market. I've always said that. You know, when it comes to tickets, it's like the stock market. It was a lot harder back in the day. If you wanted to scalp tickets, the only way that you were going to sell them and make money on it is if you were standing outside of the arena, say, oh, we got third row WWE tickets here, WWF tickets here. We got second row for a concert, you know, $500. And you got to hope that an undercover cop doesn't bust you. Now, online, you could auction it on eBay to the highest bidder. You could go on these secondary resale sites. You could sell a ticket that you paid $100 for and try to sell it for $5,000. If somebody wants to give you that money for it, hey, good for you. But every time somebody sends me a photo of a half-empty building for any wrestling event when I know more tickets were sold, I say the same thing every time. AEW's got their money. They sold 81,035 tickets. If 10,000, 5,000, you know, 2,000 people don't show up because they couldn't attend or they were trying to make too much money online and they got stuck with their tickets, doesn't matter. AEW got their money. When people say to me, oh, you got to see it right now on Ticketmaster, they're selling tickets for Dynamite for $2. Yeah, because somebody was trying to hold out thinking that somebody was going to overpay. And then the day of the event, they realized that nobody bought their ticket. So they want to make something out of it rather than just throwing it in the garbage. How many times have we talked about this over the years? So when they announced during All In that the 81,035 was the paid attendance, I thought that was inflated. I said it. I know Kev said it. I didn't think it was grossly inflated, but that number seemed a little bit too high. If you looked at that building closely, and if you remember, I showed screenshots of some other events like 6 months ago and showed you what 50,000 fans look like, 70,000 fans, 90,000 fans. So, you know, whatever, but they're not a publicly traded company. So, you know, you take the number as you want. But I think what a lot of people did not realize is that just like the United States, you can request information from the United Kingdom. In the United States, we have the Freedom of Information Act that, you know, if you want specific information about something, you can request it. And if it's not something classified, you know, they will give it to you. So on the heels of AEW All In, you had a bunch of people who contacted the United Kingdom and wanted the actual numbers from the Freedom of Information, plain and simple. And what they did was they went to the Brent Council, the Brent Civic Center. Google it if you want to see instructions on how you could go about doing this. But a few people contacted the Brent Council, who does provide that information. You put in a request, how many people actually attended AEW All In. Now, anybody that's old like me, you'll remember this more. Wherever you live, if you went to baseball games when you were younger, back in the 70s and the 80s and even the 90s when I used to go to baseball games, we had turnstiles. You know, you showed up, you gave your ticket, and then you would go through this, you know, this turnstile, you know, little bar in front of you. And, you know, that's not done just so one person could go in the building at a time. All right. Those actually count how many times it is turned. You know, just like in a train station back in the day, you had turnstiles. You put the token in and the turnstile would turn. It didn't just turn one time so it prevents the next person from. It also counted how many people entered the subway through the turnstiles. So Wembley Stadium has turnstiles. So when you go to AEW All In and you show your ticket, you go through a turnstile. And every time it turns, it counts a number. And at the end of the night, they count how many times the turnstiles were turned. And it ends up, this is straight from the Brent Council, Freedom of Information Request, United Kingdom, Wembley. Quote, the actual numbers registered entering the stadium through the turnstiles was 72,265. This is reflective of what attended on the night and not the total number of tickets sold or no shows. It's not brain surgery. People that bought tickets that didn't show, whether they couldn't make it or they were scalpers or even it's just an everyday person that said, you know, let me just buy a couple of tickets and throw it up on eBay, see if I could double my money. And then they end up getting stuck with it. Now, 8,000 tickets sounds a little bit high. May not be as high as you think. 10%? 10%? Let's chop the numbers down a little bit. 10,000 seat stadium. Sells out, 9,000 people show up. That doesn't sound like a huge number that 900 or 1,000 seats were empty because you may have 100 or 200 people that can't make it last minute. You know, maybe bad weather, got sick, got stuck at work, something happened, you know, that prevented them from going. You know, I mean, how many times do you see online where people say, oh, crap, I can't go to the show tomorrow. Does anybody want to go? It's not tens of thousands, but, you know, for a 10,000-seat arena, you might have 100 people that will do that. And then you got to think about people that buy the tickets just for resale. You know, back in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, if you wanted to scalp tickets and make money off of it, you had to stand outside the arena. And I can't tell you how many times you would show up for, like, a WWF event. And somebody would be outside, yeah, third row tickets, yeah, $500. And you better hope that an undercover cop doesn't catch you. That's how you were able, not like now where you could just go online and go on a secondary marketplace and sell your tickets. So at the end of the day, 72,265 people went through the turnstiles at Wembley. I still believe that 81,000 number is accurate for tickets sold. I truly believe that. But you also got to understand that That is a legit, strong, accurate number, an unbiased person. This is freedom of information. They're not going to turn around and be a little biased because they like AEW or they don't like WWE. So what does it do? It brings out the dumbest of the dumb. Denial, denial, denial. You know, I don't know what it is about it. AEW fans that have to insist that something about AEW has got to top WWE statistically so they can brag and rub it in WWE. WWE does it, is not offended when you brag that Dynamite outdrew NXT in the ratings. The wrestlers might take offense to it and be a little bit ego, you know, hurt with their egos. But, you know, it's just like I was talking to somebody last night and they were showing it to me. You know, we watched on NXT the Von Wagner, Bron Breakker, you know, the medical update that they provided this week. And I thought the segment last week was phenomenal when Bron Breakker, you know, took the ring steps and smashed Von Wagner's head. And he did the medical update yesterday. You know, he's got a fractured skull and he's going to be out. And you get these media guys that hate AEW, that don't like NXT. And they have to use wording like, you know, I have to admit that was a great worked segment. You know, like why they have to throw even the Dominic Mysterio stuff from Monday's Raw. It's an entertainment company. Yes, it's kind of funny sometimes how they pipe in things. But, you know, they thought that they were like, ha, gotcha moment. Because the audio level with Dominic, with the crowd, was up a little bit and down a little bit. And the funny thing is Samantha Irvin went after some people online and she was showing a text conversation that she was having with her father during the moment that Dom came out with Judgment Day. And I'm not defending Judgment Day here, but she even told the Duchess, you can't believe how loud it is in here right now. You know, and, you know, yeah, maybe WWE, actually, they did. They definitely enhanced it even more, but it was already loud. I'm not taking one side or the other, but what do you have now? You have people out there, oh, what does attendance mean? I'm not kidding, guys. People are bringing up, what does attendance actually mean? What does it actually mean? So somebody says, you know, try to be, remember when I say that people out there don't want the actual answers to things? They're like, shh, no, 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 don't clear it up. We want to keep talking about it. Somebody with a level head writes, paid attendance implies that 81,000 people actually attended the event. Even if you bought a ticket, if you weren't at Wembley, you shouldn't have been included in that number, period. And someone's like, no, it implies 81,035 people paid to be there. Not all of them were there, but they paid to be there, so they're paid attendance. So I have to go to a fucking dictionary, everybody. What is the definition of attendance? The straight Webster's, Cambridge, Collins dictionary. Attendance means the number of people present. Period. You have people out there that you would have thought you took away their favorite pet or their firstborn because now it can be claimed that WWE still has the biggest attended wrestling event in history. I still believe that AEW sold more tickets than WWE in history. So I still will call AEW as the biggest selling event of all time for now. But when it comes to attendance, you got to call it like it is. 72,265 is the new number. And guess what, guys? That is still an amazing, epic, awesome number for AEW. Why would anybody even, you know, have a problem with that number other than, but it's lower than WWE's biggest. That's the only reason why people would get upset at that, and that is pathetic. It is, it's amazing. And again, it just shows you that pro wrestling does have, in many cases, the dumbest of the dumb. You got to go online. You got to go see it for yourself. It's pretty hilarious. So, but as I said right before Monday's show online, it sucks that the Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, CM Punk incident has overshadowed AEW All In. Everybody should have taken that as momentum. Of course, it wasn't going to come even 1/20th. Well, I should say 1/5th. What am I saying? 20%. 1/5th of, you know, what they got at Wembley. But it's a nice high to come off of. You know, you have, it's even like in sports. You know, you have a really good game and you hope you want to build on it. And literally minutes after AEW All In, the only thing people could talk about is what happened backstage with Jack Perry and CM Punk. And that is awful. And 2 weeks ago, if you saw the thumbnail that I posted for that Wednesday Night Dynamite, it was a picture of Jack Perry, and the caption said, "Still a jungle boy." You could put facial hair on him. You could put a leather jacket, a hot chick. You could give him tattoos, shave his head, you know, let him wear whatever, spikes. He is still a boy. He is an immature man. He proved it at AEW All In. He was a part of history. Most tickets sold for any wrestling event. And because he was so livid that this CM Punk guy is telling me weeks, months ago, I can't use real glass. Whoa, CM Punk, cry me a river. This was real glass. Instead of letting it go, soaking in the fact that you're part of history, what was on his mind is, let me embarrass this motherfucker. And Jack Perry has gotten a pass big time from this. And it's understandable because he is one of Tony Khan's favorites. And by default, that means he is a lot of people's favorites online. He's a media darling. You know, people are saying to me, oh, well, they edited footage out of the highlights of Hook's match. Well, yeah, what does that mean? He's still employed. But, big but, CM Punk, because he is a veteran guy, because he is, you know, unofficially, you know, in an authoritative position, you know, not, you know, taking a page from last year, but EVPs, executive vice presidents, have no business charging into somebody's office and getting physical. You are part of office. No, CM Punk was not an EVP, but CM Punk was one of the leaders of that locker room for Saturdays. He was the go-to guy. When you heard the stories, remember the rules that came out? That AEW put out all these rules that if you want to do this, you got to get approval. You can't do this. You can't bleed and roll into the crowd. You can't do this. A lot of that was done because of insurance risk. And the insurance risk is not just AEW. WarnerMedia has a stake in AEW. Nobody ever wants to talk about that. If you anybody that's a long-time follower of what I do, you will remember all of the countless times that I talked about Spike TV and how they were financially invested in TNA, and nobody wanted to hear it at that time. Nobody wanted to hear it. Spike TV had so much money invested in TNA, and nobody would accept it. People started getting inklings of it when you saw the UFC, you know, MMA influence, you know, Tito Ortiz, and others. That was Rampage Jackson on it. Like, they were forcing. We were just talking about Frank Trigg versus AJ Styles, which happened this week in history. It's on my history episode this week. You know, now, in hindsight, people realize, you know, didn't Eric Bischoff just recently say that, you know, Spike TV was the one that paid a lot of Hogan's contract? People didn't want to hear it at that time, and they don't want to hear it now about AEW. WarnerMedia has their stake invested in AEW. And the thing is, CM Punk was one of the authority figures for Collision. He was never going to have that official title because of the Young Bucks, because of Kenny Omega, because of so many people that despised him in that company. He would always be unofficially one of those guys. When you heard the original story about the glass, what did you hear? Tony Schiavone told Jack Perry, that's not a good idea. Other wrestlers told him, Jack Perry, that's not a good idea. And then they all went to CM Punk. Maybe you could get through this to this kid. And CM Punk said, look, we don't do that here. Did CM Punk get, get criticized for it? Did CM Punk get get reprimanded from AEW? You know, who are you to tell this guy what he could do and what he can't do? No. Jack Perry, like a child, like a parent saying, you can't have that. Nope, you can't have that. You can't go out. You can't play games. You didn't do your homework. You're not allowed to do this. Nope, you're not allowed. And you're just seething and seething and seething like a child, and you finally get the opportunity to perform in front of 70,000 plus, and you could not fucking wait to do that glass spot and rub it in CM Punk's face. That guy has got it so easy right now. If CM Punk got fired, that guy should have been fired as well, in my opinion. But my thoughts on CM Punk being fired by Tony Khan, to quote a famous dog from a TV show called Family Guy, CM Punk, you blew it. You blew it. You were making crazy amounts of money. You had some power. You had a lot of people on that roster that you were mentoring. You're trying to morph Collision into something that could end up special that doesn't happen overnight. You had a lot of influence, a lot of pull. And instead of taking the high road, you blew it. CM Punk, you blew it.
You blew it.
You blew it.
Knock, knock. Who's there? You blew it.
You blew it. Now, for people out there that don't know this little aspect, let me explain something to you. Wembley in the back has tons of speakers, tons of monitors. Do you remember the Max Caster rap? I don't remember what episode it was. I'd have to go back to my archives, but there was one time that he did a rap and he said something really inappropriate. And people were hush-hush about it for a couple of days. And then it started circulating across the net, you know, what he said to the live crowd. And then I think he was suspended for like 30 days or something like that. And if you remember when that went down, as much as I'm a fan of Max Caster, what did I tell all you guys? They have speakers in the back during that episode. The minute Max Caster said what he said, everybody in the back heard it. But for a couple of days, they all acted like they had no idea what he said. You know, when it keep that on your brain, because at Wembley, when this happened, and this is the little news tidbit that no one has really reported about, that CM Punk getting ready for his match against Samoa Joe, who was going to follow Hook versus Jack Perry. He's getting ready, and he is in the back. And when they do the glass spot, through the monitors, through the speakers, everybody in the back hears and sees Jack Perry say, "That's real glass, cry me a river." Everybody immediately fucking looks at CM Punk. And CM Punk hears that blasting over the speakers, this punk little bitch, you know, biggest event ever. He couldn't wait to do the spot anyway. And who gave him the permission to do that spot, by the way? And he embarrasses CM Punk. The little aspect of it that no one has talked about, and I got this straight from someone who I'm friends with that works for AEW, said to me, DT, you know, a little tidbit here, as far as CM Punk that no one is really focused on. The minute Jack Perry said that and CM Punk started cursing in the back, Tony Khan told CM Punk, let me take care of it. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. Go out there and have a great match. Let me take care of it. I'll handle it. And CM Punk ignored him. CM Punk ignored him. And the minute Jack Perry went to that back through the curtain, they had their confrontation. And it led to everything that happened. So CM Punk was, I don't want to say threatened. He was asked by Tony Khan, please, don't say anything. Let me take care of it. Go out there, have a great match. You know, let me take care of it. And CM Punk wasn't having that. That alone warrants suspension. But as you know, by now, he has been fired. And I pulled up the actual statement as far as what Tony Khan said. And, you know, I'm not going to read it word for word, but there's three words that he said that really sums up why he made that statement on Collision. And now, listen, a little loud audio alert coming. And this is not rehearsed, but, you know, I know Tony Khan said he feared for his life. And a lot of people are laughing at that. You know, you're in a locker room. You know, there's a lot of adrenaline. There's a lot of testosterone. People don't get along with each other. People do have skirmishes. Tony Khan has witnessed other altercations as well. Fearing for his life was strategically said for a legal reason. And when I get to Nick Khan, the other Khan, talking about CM Punk in an interview yesterday, it is also, it has legalese involved. But, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't see the altercation. I have talked to people who witnessed it. It was a mess. Was it life-threatening? No. I guarantee you, if some of you out there were around Tony Khan and you crept up behind him and just went, boo! He would just go, ah! He would freak out. He would freak out. Tony Khan is, you know, he's a little soft. I mean, and that's not criticism of Tony Khan. But the reason for his statement is for legal reasons. You got to understand something. And, you know, I know we talk about stuff here that no one else does, because a lot of people out there just want to react and use emotion. But we got to really discuss some facts here. You remember early in the early days of AEW, Tony Khan made fun of WWE contracts, that WWE contracts aren't worth the paper that they're written on. WWE contracts are very, very detailed and with a ton of legalese in it. AEW contracts could be 3 or 4 pages. All right. You got to keep that mindset when you realize this. When AEW signed a deal with CM Punk, and AEW presents their contract to CM Punk, CM Punk gives it to his lawyers, and CM Punk has gone through WWE machine, has gone through even TNA, which, you know, their contracts weren't anything crazy, but that's, what, 2004? You know, so this is before CM Punk really blew up. But the WWE machine, CM Punk gives it to his lawyers, and his lawyers draft up a whole ton of clauses that AEW doesn't normally have in a contract. So they give it back to AEW, and Tony Khan looks at it, and he just throws it over to Mega and says, you take care of this. I don't fucking, who am I going to, you know, like, so CM Punk's attorneys, you know, they look at the very incomplete, very, very simple AEW-type contract, and they put all their other shit in there. And CM Punk had a lot of protection in the contract. And that's one of the reasons why some people in AEW were very, very bitter at CM Punk, because his legal demands were a lot different than everybody else's. You know, and then when you get involved that Warner Media, you know, want CM Punk, you know, for Collision, and people were using a One Bill Phil, you know, reference and everything. You know, this is all legal shit. So when Tony Khan, you know, has to fire CM Punk publicly, it's got to be done in a way that if CM Punk tries to take AEW to court, whatever Tony Khan says publicly, it's got to be backed up. You can't milk it. You can't water it down. And then that could be used against you. So, as I said early on in this, there were three words that Tony Khan said that sums up his whole press release, his whole statement on Collision when he fired CM Punk. And those three words are termination with cause. Termination with cause, or termination for cause. You could use it any way you want. And for those that don't know what termination for cause means, I'll give you a quick legal definition of it. Termination for cause is usually immediate when an employer has gathered needed documentation and evidence. And what that means is the employer is terminated for a reason that would be considered grave misconduct. Some examples of grave, now think of the word grave. You know, when you hear someone's in grave condition, think back to when Tony Khan said he feared for his life. It's got to be grave misconduct. Some examples: violation of the company's code of conduct or ethics, violence or threatened violence, stealing, threats or threatening behavior to a colleague or a customer, falsifying records, lying, harassment, extreme insubordination, committing a crime. You know, those are some of the reasons you could be terminated with cause or for cause. Now, another thing is that when you are terminated with cause, there is usually no compensation afterwards. There's no compensation. And that's very, very important, because if you compensate someone after they are terminated with cause, the person who was fired could possibly use that against the employer in court. Because they could claim in court that it'll confuse the employee. Like, why would you give severance to someone who violated, you know, your policy? It sends a double message. You know, you compensate someone who's being terminated immediately. It also sends a bad message to your other employees there. And that could be used in a lawsuit. Lawyers love that shit. If you fucked up,
you blew it.
If you blew it, you get no compensation, no severance, no nothing. Because if you blew it, that's it. You fucked up. You give anything afterwards, a lawyer could jump all over that and take him to court. Well, why did he get a severance? Why did they give him a departing this? Why did they? But so CM Punk being fired with cause gives the legal out for AEW to terminate him on the spot. Could CM Punk still sue AEW? Absolutely. I am 99% certain that AEW is giving him pretty much nothing. He's fired just cause. You know, they got their reason. And he gets nothing from this point forward. You think CM Punk is just going to sacrifice all that money that he was going to make in revenue and T-shirts and everything else? So CM Punk may be considering taking AEW to court. Maybe he feels that he should not have been fired with cause. And then that's up to a court to decide. So this is not over. Now, could CM Punk just go to WWE and WWE pays him a boatload of money? And, you know, CM Punk forgets about it. Yeah, that's always a possibility. But you think CM Punk is just going to say, my bad. Yeah, I fucked up. You know what? I fucked up. I got fired. I got to own it. And we move on. It's not that easy. So as of right now, Tony Khan publicly has to give a reason as to why CM Punk was fired with cause. And the violence and fearing for his life, as ridiculous as that may sound, yeah, that's legit legal reasons. So did Tony Khan write that statement? No. His lawyers definitely did. And Tony Khan, even though he wants to be the boss of creative, even though he wants to be the boss of this, understand Warner Media has a stake in AEW. So Tony Khan meets with his legal team. When you hear investigations, there's no investigation. There was no investigation last year. It was just legally they were trying to figure out how do we get out of this mess. That's what's going on. There's no internal investigations. Everybody knew what happened in the back. It was just, how do we go from here? Warner Media, the legal team, yeah, fire him, just cause. You fear for your life, he got violent, threatened you, and that you're out. As much as he didn't want to fire the guy, that was the only way to go. So, now this leads to Nick Khan. Yesterday, WWE and UFC completed their merger. And, you know, they were at the New York Stock Exchange. And I'm sure by now all of you have seen the video and the pictures of Vince and Triple H. And, you know, again, Bianca Belair and Montez Ford, pretty much the only two that are there. You know, if you follow my shows for the last 2 months, you already knew that Bianca Belair and Montez Ford were not, oh, creatively they have nothing for Bianca. No, they are involved in a lot of media for WWE, and their reality shows about to come out. So that's what they're doing. They are ambassadors for WWE right now. They are the power couple. Everybody thinks that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch is the power couple. No, it's Bianca Belair and Montez Ford. If you take a moment and just take a step back, you realize that. So they were there yesterday too. But there was a lot of media and interviews that took place afterwards. And Nick Khan was talking to ESPN. And during that interview, Nick Khan was asked about CM Punk. Now, there's two ways you could attack what Nick Khan said. You could use the common sense way, or you could use the fun way. And I say fun because I'm not criticizing anybody online that had fun with it. I saw the most repetitive remark written by people online was, wow, Nick Khan and WWE already wished CM Punk on his future endeavors and he hasn't even been rehired yet. You know, and yes, that is funny, but there's more to it. And that's why I'm here, because I tried to give you, you know, common sense. I mean, we could all laugh, we could all have fun, we could have some lighthearted humor, but we also understand why things are said and the way they're said. If you follow online, you would just think that, oh, WWE has no interest in CM Punk. They basically, you know, said, you know, yeah, we're happy for you. We wish you the best. You're not wanted here. But Nick Khan's exact statement yesterday was this. Quote, listen, we only have respect for Phil. We appreciate his run here. We appreciate what he did and tried to do with the UFC. Not many people can actually get in there and do what he did. So when we have respect for Phil, we wish him nothing but the best. That's what he said. So again, people had fun with it. Wow. You know, they're not interested at all. Here's the, you know, the gist of it. And I'm sure a lot of you already know this. You've already figured it out. WWE, UFC, Endeavor, TKO is worth billions. WWE themselves was worth $9 billion. I just explained to you legally a little bit of what's going on with AEW and CM Punk. And there is a very good possibility that CM Punk could sue AEW. The last thing that Nick Khan or anybody in management or on the board of directors is going to do is show their hand or imply publicly that they would welcome the possibility of CM Punk or consider it or, you know, never say never. WWE has no idea. This is very important, guys. Nick Khan, WWE, they're busy right now doing this shit, merging. They have no idea what is going on legally between CM Punk and AEW. They're not going to assume. Wrestling websites assume. News, podcasters, fans, me, you, we assume. When it comes to billion-dollar companies, publicly traded companies, they're not going to assume that, oh, CM Punk is clear and free. Oh, my God, it's getting late early. Free and clear. They're not going to assume that. They have no idea what's going on. So they're going to take the neutral route. That's what Nick Khan did yesterday. Whether you like Nick Khan or not, the guy is a professional. He is a master at what he does, and he knows damn well that wrestling news sites would love a little scoop, a little juice. WWE would be interested or WWE would not be interested. But legally, the last thing they're going to do is imply something one way or the other when they have no idea legally what is going on right now with Punk and AEW. That is why Nick Khan said what he said yesterday. So you take that however you want, but that is the truth. I like giving the truth on these shows. So, all right. Yesterday, Becky Lynch won the NXT Women's Championship. I got to be honest with you. I am kind of shocked on how big the rating was for her match with Tiffany Stratton. Yesterday on Patreon, I was joking around and I said that I didn't think that she would break Sasha Banks' numbers when she main evented NXT a few years ago. And Becky Lynch yesterday broke a million on NXT. You know, she outdid Dominic Mysterio, Rhea Ripley, Damian Priest, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, AJ Styles, Sasha Banks, whoever you want to, the Viking Raiders, Butch. She outdid everybody. Yesterday's NXT rating was 850,000 viewers. Only the very beginning part of NXT was under 8, and that was only for about 3 minutes. They were over 800,000 viewers the whole night, and that is awesome because that means you maintained over 800,000 viewers the entire night. But I will share something that I noticed. And again, if you know me, I don't talk about demos unless it's something that really is noteworthy. Right before Becky Lynch's main event match with Tiffany Stratton, the 45 minutes leading up to their match for the 18-49 demo, it averaged 345,000 viewers. Actually, 346,000 viewers. That was for 45 minutes, not 2 minutes before the match, not 5 minutes before the match. For 45 minutes, they averaged 346,000 viewers. When Becky Lynch's match went down, when it went down, that demo only increased from 346 to 373. So there was only a 27,000 viewership jump in the 18-49 demo. But for the overall audience, her match went up from 810,000 viewers all the way up to to 958,000 viewers. And for the 7-minute overrun, it was almost 1,100,000. I don't like including overruns, but in this case, it was almost half of a quarter. You know, when you go 1 minute, 2 minutes over, it doesn't count because that's 1/7 of a quarter. But here it was almost a half of a quarter. So she killed it as far as in the ratings department. Now, as far as the match yesterday, you know, I'm going to say this. Anybody that follows my shows on a regular basis knows that I've said that ever since Tiffany Stratton won the women's championship, her reign has been very disappointing. And her biggest feud was against a 19-year-old. And that's nothing against Thea Hale, but, you know, that was her feud, pretty much. You know, yeah, she faced Kiana James, but she's has no rivals right now. If Nikita Lyons would have been ready to return sooner, I think that would have probably went down. But outside of that, Tiffany Stratton, it's been kind of a flop. That's not her fault. It's not her fault. It's just that she has no rivals, no bitter rivalries right now. You had to do battle royals and you had to do, you know, tournaments to determine who was going to face her because there's no strong feuds going on with her. So she got a taste of what it was like to be champion. When she was in the ring, she killed it. For NXT levels, she killed it. When she was in the ring, she did her job. But it's not going anywhere right now. You know, people got angry yesterday, like, well, how could you do that to Tiffany Stratton? Who are you going to put her up against? You know, and listen, yeah, we could come up with names like Blair Davenport and others. But when you come up with a lot of those names, you kind of say the same thing. Yeah, they probably should take the title off of her. Becky Lynch, going back to NXT, becoming a Grand Slam champion, makes the NXT championship feel more important than just a minor league title. When Tiffany Stratton is showing up on Raw, sitting in the audience for consecutive weeks, it makes that title feel that there's a presence. Dominic Mysterio with the NXT North American Championship. You know, Gunther has a stranglehold on the IC title. So there's no secondary title right now that there could be a threat to lose. SmackDown has the United States title, of course. But, you know, so Dominic having the NXT North American Championship, at any given time, he could lose it. People thought he would have lost it to Dragon Lee. People thought he would have lost it to Wesley. Now he's going to face Mustafa Ali at No Mercy, and a lot of people think that Mustafa Ali is going to beat him. Every time Dominic is getting into a little mini feud with someone in NXT, people think, yeah, he may actually drop the title. The title is better off now than what it was before. There's a storyline to it. You know, Dominic is not welcome. Everybody's trying to get it off of him because, you know, he's like a mosquito inside the building. And let's give Dominic a little credit here. For those that don't like him all, that guy is working multiple shows every week. You might get a little bit sick and tired of seeing him on TV, but he wasn't even needed yesterday in NXT. That was not a pre-recorded segment with him and Mustafa Ali yesterday. Not just Mustafa Ali, but him and Carmelo Hayes yesterday. And next week, we're getting Carmelo Hayes versus Dominic Mysterio. Now, there's no titles on the line. People are trying to tease that online just to trigger emotions. Like, would WWE dare have Dominic Mysterio beat Carmelo Hayes, become NXT champion? Titles are not on the line. Period. But the guy is working his ass off, and, you know, I think he's doing a great job. Becky Lynch, if you followed our shows, outside of the Trish Stratus feud, the Zoe Stark feud was not very good, let's be honest. And outside of that, she's not feuding with Rhea Ripley right now. What do you do with Becky Lynch? You know, so you bring it to NXT. She goes for the championship that she has never won before. You turn in a little storyline, Tiffany Stratton being a little bit of a bratty bitch. you know, thinking that she's better than what she is, and she's taking little insults at Becky Lynch. I'm sorry that you were never NXT champion, and it bit her in the ass. It's a learning lesson. Becky Lynch looked like she was having fun yesterday. You're kind of going back to your roots. You know, how many times have you seen documentaries over the years where a wrestler will go back to his high school or go back to the indie promotion where it all started? They go back to their little town that has 100 people in it. You know, that brings back emotions. You go back to the simpler times. The times remind you, you know, where you were and how hard it was to get up the ladder. And you have a little fun giving back. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. For 3-plus years, I've been saying that they should have main roster stars pop up in NXT and have little feuds here and there. It's not demotions. It makes it's such an uplift for that NXT roster. For Tiffany Stratton, you don't think that she wasn't in cloud nine, that holy shit, I'm getting the opportunity to take on Becky Lynch? Holy fucking shit. Imagine if you're an up-and-comer and then one of the biggest stars in your profession, you know, shows up. You get the opportunity to work with them. You know, people got upset when Carmelo Hayes lost on Raw, and Carmelo Hayes immediately went on social media and was like, are you kidding me? The last 48 hours have been fucking incredible. You know, people just look at wins and losses and don't look at the deeper meaning. Do people forget that NXT is owned by WWE, which is now owned by TKO? That why force it to make it appear to be so much beneath Raw and SmackDown? Becky Lynch winning this championship gives a little bit more of an uplift for that title. It is not hurting Tiffany Stratton in any way, shape, or form. It may not be, you know, similar for some people when Dolph Ziggler took it from Braun. Braun ultimately got it back, and Braun was better for it. But this is going to help Tiffany Stratton, her character, you know, adapting. You know, it's not always just winning. It's losing, and losing big sometimes as well. You know, this is entertainment. And everybody who was live yesterday were pretty fucking entertained. A lot of people online were entertained. I did a watch party yesterday, and everybody, including me, were entertained. That's what it's about. Entertaining fans. Nobody was hurt by that match yesterday. And I thought it was great. I don't think Becky Lynch will hold the championship all that long. But if you look at people who really follow NXT, what did you see written today? Wow, maybe Becky could pass the torch. It's not retiring. I don't mean it like that, but give a nice little rub for Lyra Valkyria. That maybe Lyra ends up beating Becky for that championship. A lot of people are high on Lyra. You know, they did that little interaction with Rhea Ripley. Trust me, Lyra is the next woman on WWE's radar to elevate to the next level. You got Cora Jade, you got Roxanne Perez, you got a bunch of others, you know, that are very capable. But Lyra, they definitely see something special. Becky could end up passing the title to her. People think that she could pass the title to others. And then they're doing this breakout tournament again. It's not going to obviously lead to somebody becoming a champion overnight. Lola Vice, I am beyond impressed on how quickly she is taking a wrestling. It's amazing. You know, for some of you out there that don't follow NXT on a regular basis, Lola Vice picking it up the way she is, it's you know, she's not going to be a major, major player in the women's division for the foreseeable future, but man, is she picking it up really, really quickly. And one other thing yesterday, you know, we had some goofy spots yesterday in NXT. There was a segment where Dijak started whipping a tree with a belt, And I understand the storyline behind it and everything, but it was just goofy. And then you had Ava Raine and Joe Gacy, which I guess they were in a cemetery or something. They put their hands on like a petrified tree. It's, you know, NXT always has this goofy stuff. JC Jane and Thea Hale beating up a couple of guys. It was just, you know, some of it's intended to be goofier than goofy. But they had some banger matches yesterday as well. NXT yesterday determined the new number one contender for the NXT Heavyweight Championship. Ilya Dragunov beat Wes Lee, and now they're doing a little bit of a storyline where Wes Lee is going home. They showed him with his wife. He took his name tag off the locker. He put his stuff in his suitcase. He doesn't know what's next for him, and his wife was waiting at the back door, and you know, he kissed his wife and they walked out, and they're implying that Wes Lee may be done with NXT. This could be a promotion to the main roster. It's also a possibility that he returns and gets involved. You know, some people think that he could even possibly turn heel. I don't think you turn Wes Lee heel anytime soon. Wes Lee is doing such a good job right now. You don't fuck with something that feels special. It's a shame what happened, you know, with Nash Carter. You know, it still sucks because I liked MSK. And ultimately, they could end up teaming again. But, you know, there's some nice little storylines being involved as well. And, man, Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker, who are going to face each other at No Mercy. In no way, shape, or form is Baron Corbin a babyface. But you could see, you know, that he is trying, you know, to have a different, you know, element of his character. And I'm not a fan of his. I'm not suddenly on the, you know, the bandwagon. But, you know, when he was name-dropping the Bron Breakker yesterday, he faced The Undertaker in Madison Square Garden, retired Kurt Angle, and some of the other accolades, faced Roman Reigns. And it's, whether you like it or not, those are pretty damn big accomplishments by him. And the crowd was acknowledging it. You know, so, you know, it's there is a good vibe with Baron Corbin right now. Dana Brooke, though, not so much, but she is on the verge of turning heel. Every time she tries to snap, you know, Kalani Jordan is calming her down. But, you know, in a matter of no time, Kalani Jordan is going to calm Dana Brooke down, and Dana Brooke is going to just turn around and whack her and start beating the fuck out of her. And then Dana Brooke will turn full-blown heel. And that's necessary. We've been saying that the first night she returned to NXT. The crowd still chants, Dana sucks. And they want to let loose. And I'm not a fan of Dana Brooks. I've never been a fan of Dana Brooks. But I'm very intrigued to see how she handles being a full-blown heel in a very intimate crowd. It could work. Unfortunately, though, as we have discussed countless times over the years, sometimes people could work and work and work and try and train and work and try and train, and they don't get better. If that was the case, everybody that played baseball would be batting 300. Everybody shooting hoops would be getting 20 points a game or shooting at 70%. You know, like, there are people who will, you know, work hard and work every single day for years and years and years and still bat 220, 250. Get 4 points a game. You know, they're just not people. Some people are just not cut out to be the elite of the elite. And what you try to see on WWE television and AEW television, to an extent, you want to see the best of the best. And I don't know turning heel is going to suddenly make Dana Brooke a polished wrestler. If you watch her matches closely, you know what I'm talking about. So, anyway, match results from yesterday. Ilya Dragunov beating Wes Lee to become the number one contender for Carmelo Hayes' championship. This match was freaking awesome. And something about that match that I've been talking about a little as well. I don't really talk about it much on Wednesdays because we focus on NXT and AEW. But, you know, people have been asking me, like, DT, what do you think is going to be one of the changes that's going to happen with WWE now since it's owned by TKO? And, you know, we'll get into it a little more on Saturday, but I'll say this right now. You will see more shots that connect. And no, pro wrestling is supposed to be an art form. Bret Hart was beautiful, you know, with the suspension of disbelief that he was really punching someone. Anybody could punch somebody in the face or kick somebody in the face legit. But when you watch the match with Wes Lee and Ilya Dragunov yesterday, you see that sometimes you can connect. And believe me, they'll slow it down and they'll replay it over and over again to really absorb, you know, the power of the shot. And Ilya took some shots to the face yesterday. You know, I bring it up with UFC. I'm not a fan of UFC, but when you watch Ultimate Fighting and you see the shots to people's heads, do you feel like that they are very, very concerned about concussions and this and that? You know, this is owned now by a combat sport. You know, the company that, you know, was big with combat sports. So you'll see a little bit more of the relaxation as far as, you know, the suspension of disbelief of the violence you'll see on TV. I don't know if you'll start seeing blood on a regular basis, but you'll see, you know, a little bit relaxed as far as some of the, you might see people slapping each other a little bit more. You know, I think Gunther's style is a great example of it. But that's up to the individual wrestlers. Damon Kemp, Charlie Dempsey, and Drew Gulak beat Miles Bourne, Brooks Jensen, and Josh Briggs. Miles Bourne turned heel during this match. Nothing against Miles Bourne, but nobody cared. I didn't care either. He just turned on his team, and he joined up with the other guys. Lyra Valkyrie over Dana Brooke. Tyler Bate over Axiom in the Global Heritage Tournament. Creed Brothers over Idris Enofi and Malik Blade. Nathan Frazier over Akira Tozawa in the Global Heritage International Tournament. And as we said earlier, Becky Lynch beat Tiffany Stratton to become the NXT Women's Champion. And let me add one last thing about that as well. You know, Becky Lynch is going to still be on Raw. Becky Lynch will be bringing that NXT Championship to Raw. You may even see somebody from NXT fight Becky Lynch for the NXT Championship on Raw. Becky Lynch will probably go up to Rhea Ripley and throw it in her face that she's got a championship also. So keep all of these things in the back of your mind, and because some people online are trying to convince you that Becky Lynch is now demoted to NXT and she's off Raw for a little while. Uh-uh. I guarantee you that is not the case. Far from it. Impact Wrestling is going to be celebrating their 1,000th episode. Pretty freaking cool. This Thursday's Impact episode 1,000. I hope they pop a nice rating, man. They've been around 100 to 130,000, which, you know, it's better than what it was a year ago, but still, they definitely deserve a little bit of a better number. But they did have a lot of nostalgia. The event is already taped. I'm not going to give you spoilers, but I will tell you the matches that went on. And there is a lot of old school in this. Some names, for some of you out there that don't follow Impact, you're probably hearing some of these names for the first time, but there are some very recognizable names here. Jody Threat versus Kylan King, Masha Slamovic and Killer Kelly, who are the Impact Knockouts Tag Team Champions. They take on the Death Dolls. There's going to be an Ultimate X match involving Zach Wentz, Rich Swann, Samurai Del Sol, Mike Bailey, Ace Austin, and Allen Angels. You'll see Yuya Uemura, Crazy Steve, Chris Bey, and Moose involved in a Feast or Fired match. That's a little old school. Tasha Steeles, Mickey James appear. Team 3D actually are in the ring. Devon back in the ring wrestling. Doesn't do too much. I don't want to give anything away. But Team 3D return, and they will take on a Desi Hit Squad. Tracy Brooks and her hubby, Frankie Kazarian, versus Alicia and Eddie Edwards, the other husband and wife. Chris Sabin versus Leo Rush for the Impact X Division Championship. Leo Rush is the current champion. Dirty Dango versus Jake Sumpton. America's Most Wanted and Team Canada versus Big Con, Diener, Sheldon John, and Kenny King. Josh Alexander versus Trey Miguel. Rhino and Tommy Dreamer versus Moose and Brian Myers. And a match that I think everybody is going to be looking forward to seeing. Deanna Purrazzo, Giselle Shaw, Savannah Evans, Tasha Steeles, and Angelina Love. They take on Jordan Grace, Mickey James, Trinity, Awesome Kong, and Gail Kim. That's going to be cool to see Awesome Kong back. Trinity as well. I will never forget. I haven't told it in years, but one of the coolest moments that I ever had with Trinity, personally. Trinity is from my neck of the woods. And when I was doing the crappy indie wrestling managing stuff, my first character name was Tony Cannoli. I was always a wrestling manager, but my first character name was Tony Cannoli. And I would bring cannolis to ringside. I would give out cannolis to all the fans. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the video. And then after they take all the cannolis, I'm left with empty trays. And I would give the tray to the person I'm managing, and they'd use it as a weapon and win. So it was a sneaky way to get weapons at ringside. That was pretty much what it was. When I started being able to develop a character a little bit, then we did a segment once where I passed cannolis out to everyone, and then I got chair bashed from Low Life Louie, and people laughed at me. So the following show, I came back with cannolis again. Everybody ate them, and then I dumped 12 empty boxes of X-Lax in the ring. And people actually thought that I spiked the cannolis with X-Lax. So anyway, reeling this back in a little bit, what does this have to do with Trinity? Well, one of the first times that I was bringing cannolis to the shows, Trinity was on the show as well. And when I was setting up the cannolis, she had happened to walk over and she saw the box from the bakery. And here in New York, there is a famous bakery called Circos, C-I-R-C-O-S. They're on Knickerbocker Avenue in Brooklyn, Ridgewood, Brooklyn. My parents, when I was first born, I lived in Brooklyn right off of Knickerbocker Avenue. My father used to work on Knickerbocker Avenue. And my father, you know, sometimes would treat us and come home with a box of cannolis from Circos or almond cookies or things like that. So Circos is so legendary. I know movies have used Circos in their movies, but when she saw the box of cannolis and saw Circos, she popped. She was very familiar with Circos, and she had a cannoli, and she's like, oh, my God, you know, that's the... She made such a fuss about the cannolis, and that was a cool moment. So I remember Trinity for her wrestling career and her stunt work and everything, but I always remember the moment when she showed up and made such a big deal about the cannolis and Circos. That was fun. So, all right, before we get out of here, let me give you some quick AEW Dynamite results. And I know what some of you are saying right now, DT, wait a minute. When you opened the show, you said you were doing this hours before AEW Dynamite. Yeah, that's true. But with the power of a pause button, I said, you know what? Let me include some results in here, a couple of quick things. So I actually waited until late this evening to finish up the show. So I'm just going to give you an overview of what went down tonight. Some of it, people found a little confusing. Some very predictable. I mean, if you tune into Monday's show that I did and we were previewing Dynamite, the matches were so freaking predictable. And that's one of the problems with AEW. You know, you can't have, even though the matches are quality, you can't have such predictable outcomes. Case in point, everybody and their mother that I was talking to Monday night during the show felt that Toni Storm was going to win that four-way and take on Saraya in New York at Arthur Ashe for the championship. And lo and behold, Toni Storm beat Nyla Rose, Hikaru Shida, and Britt Baker. So the fellow Outcast members are going to face each other next week. Next week, we have the Sex Gods, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. They're going to go at it one-on-one. You know, and listen, those two are close. And they've been together, part of a few factions over the last 4 years. and they're going to face each other, and we got to see, you know, what transpires afterwards. Because you remember, you know, it wasn't too long ago where the Inner Circle, that, you know, they were better than ever, and then 2 weeks later they had to have a meeting, and then, you know, they faced each other, I think, in a tag team, and then things were back together. I mean, we've kind of revisited this several times before, but still, I think Jericho and Guevara is going to be a lot of fun next week. It's a match that I think some people are not looking forward to, and I actually think that I'm not going to say it's going to steal the show, but seeing them trying to build up, you know, a tease of a little friction, but for Sammy Guevara to get to go at it with Chris Jericho, I mean, I would love to be in that position. Hangman Adam Page beat Brian Cage. We had John Moxley open up the show as well, and I should have mentioned this right at the beginning, but, you know, a lot of people were confused tonight. You know, yes, he took on Big Bill, the former Big Cass, W. Morrissey, and yes, Big Bill is a heel, but John Moxley's been playing one of the nastiest heels on AEW for the, you know, a majority of 2023, and he comes out today, and he's pretty much a baby face. And please do not say to me, well, they're in Cincinnati and that's John Moxley's hometown. You got to look, remember the character when he was a heel. It didn't matter where he was and what he was doing. He was always the same vicious asshole. But tonight, baby face, you know, fun match with Big Bill. I mean, we knew what the outcome was going to be. And, you know, Moxley once again bleeding like he always does. But, you know, hey, I will say this, though. I think some people are going to start feeling the same way they did when Orange Cassidy would open up Dynamites a little bit too often. I think you're going to start seeing that with John Moxley. You know, you would hear Orange Cassidy's music hit, and you're like, oh, we're going to open up Dynamite again. So now, you know, with the Wild Thing music, we're probably going to see the same thing with Mox. Darby Allin and Nick Wayne over 2.0. You know, again, we've been dissecting the ratings, and Nick Wayne has been part of the most abysmal numbers over and over and over again. And I know there's an inspirational story, and I know that's Darby Allin's buddy, and I know Tony Khan has fallen in love with him. But, you know, man, sometimes, you know, you got to put people on the show, you know, or you got to take people off the show that really should not be getting that kind of play. I know some of you out there will wholeheartedly disagree with me on that, but I just, you know, leave it as a storyline on Rampage. You know what I mean? Leave it like that. But, and another predictable match. Samoa Joe beats Roderick Strong. So Samoa Joe will face MJF for the championship next week at Arthur Ashe. I'm not crapping on the results. I'm not crapping on some of the footage that I've seen from tonight's Dynamite. But again, when you look at the card up and down, did anybody honestly think that Big Bill was going to become international champion? Did anybody honestly think that Brian Cage was going to beat Hangman Page? Does anybody honestly think that Roderick Strong was going to beat Samoa Joe? And for the majority of you out there, you truly believed that Tony Storm was going to be the one facing Saraya. So if you already know the outcomes, you know, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not going to, sometimes it's not an incentive enough for me to see the matches as they go down. And I think they got to start putting some matches together where the victor, more times than not, cannot be determined. You know, I mean, I know we get a lot of rinse and repeat on WWE television. Outside of Gunther and outside of Roman Reigns and, you know, maybe two or three others, you know, we see people, you know, winning matches unexpectedly. We see people losing matches surprisingly. I just think the predictable outcomes, more than anything, hurt AEW. Even if it's 100, 200,000 viewers, that's not a lot of viewers when you really think about it. How many people, I got to watch it. No matter, even though I know the outcomes, even though I know exactly how it's going to go down tonight, I got to watch every minute of it. MJF Adam Cole, you know, continuing their segments. They happen to be some of the most highest points of the show. Tonight, MJF cutting a pre-recorded promo, you know, ahead of the match. And a little tribute to Scott Steiner with a little Steiner math as well. And again, with Impact celebrating their 1,000th episode, trust me, Scott Steiner's mathematics. Even though, did that even happen on an Impact? I don't remember if that, I thought that happened on pay-per-view. But still, hey, that doesn't mean you can't pay tribute to it. So I'm just hoping that Swerve Strickland starts getting a little more exposure. You know what? I'm going to close out this episode saying one thing personally. There's a lot about AEW that has problems with their foundation. You know, there's a problem about the culture. There is definitely issues. I don't think those issues go away. I'm just waiting for the next person who's going to rub people the wrong way and become public enemy number four, public enemy number five. But, you know, there are a lot of people in that company that are just working, having a good time, and trying to put on the best performances they can. And you could see that. And for me personally, it warms my heart more than you can imagine to not only see Prince Nana getting the opportunity that he's getting, but to see how much the AEW audience has embraced him. And believe me when I tell you, this is not kissing Prince Nana's ass. And I think if he hears this, he knows that it's not in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I know Prince Nana, you know, for 20 years. And we even did some personal business together, which I've told a story or two in the past with. And I wasn't always the best customer for Prince Nana. But one thing I will tell you, and I've always said it on these shows, that guy kicked ass as a manager on USA Pro Wrestling. That guy kicked ass as a manager in Ring of Honor. That guy, I know the popular phrase is, you know, someone deserves their flowers. That guy never got the opportunity to perform in the big time. And when he first came in, I'm being straight up honest. When he first came into AEW, I honestly thought, he'll get a little Rampage. He'll be mostly on Ring of Honor television because of Ring of Honor's history. And he's not going to be labeled as a... He'll be almost like what, you know, like some of the other managers, Jose the assistant. Like, nobody really takes him that seriously. And even what's-his-face with the fucking neck brace, Sterling, Mark Sterling. Like, he'll be like one of those. Like, nobody will take a... I think, seriously, Prince Nana, outside of Don Callis, is the number one manager in AEW. And he just got a contract extension or signed the deal for multiple years. Prince Nana is getting paid. And it makes me smile more than you all can imagine. That guy for 20 years, you know, did what he did, worked outside of wrestling, took care of his personal stuff, did everything the right way, good guy, genuinely a good guy. I know he's a dick on TV, but I'm telling you, Nana, there are so many people here in New York that are so happy for you. And I am really, really happy for him. And very cool to see that happen on television. So, all right, everybody. I'm going to jet out of here. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I wanted to keep the show primarily on four or five topics. You know, there's no need to get into 35 different topics. You know, if we stick to like a couple of main ones. We do so many shows during the week, we obviously could spread it out. Now, I will tell you this. This Saturday, we will talk a little bit about the final merger of UFC and WWE, TKO, where it goes from here, what to expect changed on TV, what not to expect on TV. We're also going to talk a little bit more about CM Punk and WWE. Now, tonight, we only talked about what happened in AEW, you know, my thoughts on it, Nick Khan's comments, but Saturday we talk as wrestling fans. And I truly believe CM Punk will end up in WWE. It might not be for a long period of time, but I truly believe it's going to happen. When you see the thumbnail preview on YouTube for Saturday's show, it'll give you a little inside tease of where I think CM Punk would fit like a glove on WWE. And I'll also explain why I think CM Punk will not be the problem child that he was in AEW. You know, one thing that I'll leave you with when I go off the air right now, something to remind yourself about. CM Punk, with all due respect, has always been an asshole in many ways. Not always an asshole. I mean, he looks out for people. You know, he doesn't get enough credit for that, but in many cases, he is an asshole. If he doesn't like someone or somebody rubs him the wrong way, he will go to your face and tell you. He is an asshole. Yet, TNA hired him. Yet, Ring of Honor hired him. Yet, WWE hired him. Yet, AEW hired him. Yet, he worked on UFC hired him. So, as much of an issue and a complainer and outspoken and, you know, not easy to work with in all of these years, yet companies still bring him aboard. You think suddenly he's going to be banished from the pro wrestling world as a result? I don't think so. We will talk about it Saturday and a whole bunch more. I am Don Tony.
You blew it.
Nah, I didn't blow it. But CM Punk did. Be well, everyone. Much love. Glad to be back. And I will all catch you next week. Your next edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Take it easy.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.